Hello there. Welcome back to the K-Word. We have been away for quite some time due to episodes disappearing, and we've recorded them, files have disappeared. We've not had a chance to edit them. But we are back now. I'm Mitch, and joining me today we've got Keb.
Hello.
And we've got James.
Hello.
Yeah, it's been since Survivor Series, not since we last all sat down to chat about wrestling, but since we last managed to successfully record a chat about wrestling, which is, it's a long time in WWE. That's about 18 pay-per-views ago now. But yeah, today we're going to have a chat about the, now the dust has settled on WrestleMania 34, what we thought of that show, and the Superstar Shake-Up, how that's going to affect the WWE programming for the next year or so, and hot off the tails of, I think it's a fair to say, a controversial pay-per-view, but an interesting one, as it's the first one outside of the North America for quite some time, the Greatest Royal Rumble. Let's get straight into it. WrestleMania, what did you guys think?
It existed.
A lot of weird choices, I think.
Yeah, if I was to describe it in one word, I think weird would be the word that I'd go with.
I think it definitely like defied a lot of expectations people had going into it. There were so many that people, you know, we all thought we could call how it was going to look, and time and time again, we were wrong. Should we go through it match by match and how we felt about it?
Matt Hardy winning the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. I think that's...
No complaints about that.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Reinvigorated Matt Hardy, reinvigorated Bray Wyatt, and Baron Corbin didn't really... He didn't look terrible for losing there, and can hopefully go on to something. So yeah, I thought this was a decent start. It's never going to be the greatest technical match, the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, but for getting the lads out and a bit of excitement, yeah, all for it.
Yeah, my one complaint, I guess, with it would be how, like, completely meaningless they made the whole thing feel by just, like, they're, you know, chatting in the pre-show and then, like, and now it's time for the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, and it just cuts to the ring, everyone's already in the ring, the bell rings.
Yeah.
They start the match with absolutely no pomp whatsoever, and it was the least important that is felt, including the year Mojo Rawley won it.
Yeah, I can understand that it didn't have a video package or any real story going into it, but
it didn't even have entrances for the main contenders.
Yeah, and on that two-hour pre-show, I was watching it live, I think you guys were as well. There was so much on that pre-show of just shilling the main show on the network, and it felt to me a bit like, well, I'm already watching this on the network, and you keep telling me that the network's free if I sign up. I'm like, well, I'm your paying customer. Why am I watching?
Yeah, why are you cutting away from this match to show me an advert for the service that I'm watching the match on?
Yeah. And speaking of cutting away from a match or showing an ad during a match, Cedric Alexander and Mustafa Ali, the kind of emotional high point of that match was interrupted with a video vignette for Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
Which, for me, killed all, like, I was quite invested in that match. I was enjoying it. They're not two of my kind of top guy performers. Like, I'm never tuned into a card to watch either of them, really. They're just not my style that much. But I was getting invested in that match. And then they cut away to show the same advert for Ronda Rousey that I'd seen three or four times already that night. That felt incredibly disrespectful.
And was it that match or the previous match where they cut in an advert of Paige's film?
Paige here.
Oh god, that Paige film where she was just sat looking at the camera for like just the long, about seemingly 15 seconds before she actually says, "Paige here," it felt like I was editing it. Like
it genuinely to me felt like a rib on Paige. Like they were like, you know that thing you do, Beck, when you know you'll claim that you're taking a picture of someone and you're waiting for the camera to focus and you're actually just recording them and you want to wait and see how long it is until they notice.
I do that to my dad all the time.
That's what it felt like they were doing with Paige.
But
yeah.
if they're going to do that with Paige, you then do you not just quietly let her go? You don't then plug a film all night and then make her GM of SmackDown the very next night? Like, you can't spend and you can't undermine Paige and then be like, oh yeah, she's still awesome, we still love her, and she's the GM because she's a good talker, when they've just been taking the piss out of her all evening. It's very strange. And the whole thing about this film with The Rock wrestling with my family is I feel like it's a weird one that WWE are getting involved with.
Yeah, I feel like they're only getting involved with it because they feel like they kind of have to, rather than because they actually want to. Like, it's got one of our current wrestlers in it. It's got The Rock in it. We should probably promote this because it will reflect well on us. Seems to be their mindset, rather than we actually want this to exist.
Yeah, because you can't imagine they have kind of that much control of the narrative over it or the presentation of the company. Now, I'm not saying Paige or The Rock or anyone really involved in it is going to be it's not going to be a shoot interview where they're bitching about what happened backstage, but it's definitely going to show, you'd presume, going to show some insider knowledge that they don't want out there. Like, that seems the most interesting angle on this film for me, is that, oh, I'm going to see what it's actually like to be trying out for WWE.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, the only other thing I want to say about it really is, you know, I know a little bit about makeup, not particularly much, but she looked very bad. And normally she looks very stylish and she's got a very unique sort of, you know, look to her. And there's a sort of maxim that you choose either your eyes or your lips to enhance when you do makeup. And it was very strange that she'd gone, like, normally she has the eyes, she has very, you know, smoky eyeshadow, you know, sort of gothic look. Whereas this time she'd gone very, very intense. It was really strange. I saw people online comparing it to that Simpsons.
The makeup gun.
Yeah, where Homer invents a shotgun that shoots makeup onto your face.
Yeah.
And I felt really bad for her. Like, she just didn't look good. She didn't sound good. And it's not really very fair, was it? I mean, I feel like WWE's got enough, you know, backstage know-how to have made it a lot better.
Yeah. And it is weird because, like, they must have known how rubbish that advert came across, and they played it 3 times across the pre-show and the main show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just weird. It's weird. Like, they are so good at promo packages and presenting them really professionally and well, slick, well edited. They're fantastic in the most part. And that was just rubbish. Moving on, Naomi won the Women's Battle Royal. Thought this was a fair result. It was. Naomi winning was less interesting than the Bayley Sasha Banks stuff that was going on, but that itself is kind of, that is going on and on and on and on and on. Like, I'm all for slow burn feuds, but neither of them seems to be getting any momentum or getting any more over from this slow burn feud.
Yeah, it's very difficult to do a slow burn feud when you're having a new angle that's basically repeating the same thing every single week on television. Like, if they had other stuff going on at the same time, then you can do the slow burn feud a lot easier. But because if Bayley's in a segment on Raw, then Sasha Banks is going to be in that segment and vice versa. It makes it very hard to not just make it feel very, very samey. The only other thing I wanted to say on this match was I found it really weird that Naomi is a face won by hiding under the ring for most of the match and then coming in to eliminate another face at the end. Like, that felt like something that, I don't know, like, Natalia or whoever could have done.
Yeah, a sneaky heel should have done that, not a feel the glow, believe in your dreams face.
Yeah.
I thought it was a heel turn. Obviously it wasn't.
I'm, with the exception of some obvious stuff, like, later on this very card, I'm done with assuming heel turns from faces just because they did something that's obviously rubbish to do. Because they just do it all the time and ignore it.
All right, so moving on to the main show. We had, I thought, a really good opening match, Intercontinental title match, Seth Rollins versus The Miz versus Finn Balor. I thought this was probably the perfect time for these lads to go out before they weren't going to be rushed into anything because they were right at the start of the show. They could kind of take the time with the match and tell the story that they wanted to.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the very best matches on the show. Not much more to say on that, do you?
Yeah, no, I thought it was really good. Always a massive fan of The Miz.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he did a fantastic job. The only sort of weird thing, I think, was Seth Rollins' when he comes in?
Oh, burn
it down.
And then instantly goes to an ice theme.
Yes, that was strange.
Like, obviously, they were going, you know, they had the blue contact lenses in and they were obviously invoking the sort of White Walker look, weren't they? Which was cool, but perhaps they should have changed what's shouting out at the start.
Well, it's just as a one-off, just gone like, freeze it up.
Yeah.
And Finn Balor came out, which is nice, I guess. Did he come out? I don't know.
Yeah, I thought
he came out for his entrance to the match. That's what you mean, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it was rumoured that he wasn't a straight man, and that's fine. It's strange there's still sort of been no comment on that, I guess. But it's nice. He, at the very least, is very, very proudly being an ally. So, yeah. Well, nice good stuff.
Would you like Finn Balor's entrance to have been more gay?
I would, well, you know me, if I choose, I would have everyone coming out with like feathers and basically like gold dust, like prime cross dressing, weird gay gold dust would be fine by me. But yeah, no, I mean, he looked gay enough, if you ask me. any amount of gay is gay enough.
Right. Charlotte Flair versus Asuka. The streak is over.
Yeah, so the first big surprise of the night, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, at first I was quite surprised and a little bit, I guess, annoyed about it, but I'm starting to sort of see the logic behind it, I guess. The streak is kind of restrictive in some ways. And
yeah, I guess also the assumption was that they were going to be building towards Asuka versus Ronda Rousey for next year's WrestleMania, and possibly we overlooked the fact that they've positioned consistently for the last 2 years Charlotte as being the top woman wrestler in the WWE. And that they consider Charlotte versus Rousey a lot more marketable as a match. And therefore giving Charlotte this huge win puts her up on that same sort of level where that match can potentially, you know, main event next year is one of the rumours going around.
Yeah, I can understand it as part of long-term booking for Charlotte versus Ronda. And yeah, I thought the match itself was great. I enjoyed it. I think one thing we haven't mentioned at this point is that throughout all of this, John Cena is in the crowd.
Yes, I was going to mention this at the end of this match.
And John Cena's in the crowd, and then he's just having a beer with some fans. He's having a beer. It's like apple juice or something, because we know Cena has never drank beer in his life. And then at the end of this match, they've just had this big, huge, shock, emotional finish, and Asuka's kind of said Charlotte was ready for Asuka. And then just as part of that, they cut to Cena again, and he runs straight up the ramp.
I do think they could have timed that better on the one hand, but on the other hand, I thought it was absolutely hilarious.
Oh, the image of Cena running up the ramp was funny as fuck, and that'll be one of those wrestling gifs that kind of transcends wrestling. But I think they should have put it after the next match.
Yeah, or even like after Asuka and Charlotte had gone away before the start of the next match.
Yeah, they could have just, I feel like they, in a problem that they have with pacing these WrestleManias, they have so much stuff to get through. They don't think about how an audience is going to react to a match and then how they do the next bit. I think we can chat about that later with Cesaro and Sheamus. But yeah, they don't think, Oh yeah, Cena running up the ramp while Charlotte and Asuka are still there having their moment. That won't spoil anything at all. Like, they could have just put an ad in between, have Cena do it, and then move on, rather than overlap them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be fairly easy to have been having an interview that they knew was going to get broken up by Cena running out that wasn't going to take anything away, was it?
Yeah, there's a lot of things they could have done. One thing I will say on the Charlotte and Asuka moment thing, I completely get the decision to put Charlotte over Asuka. I really don't get the decision to have Asuka seem so happy that she lost.
Yeah, she didn't see that bus fight, did she?
And like grinning and being like, "You were ready, well done, I'm so happy for you. You should be annoyed, Asuka. You just lost a chance to, you know, be, yeah, you know, win the women's title at WrestleMania. This was going to be an incredibly prestigious moment for you, and
she
now your streak's over."
The Royal Rumble to do that as well. That was supposed to be her crowning achievement. Yeah, she should have definitely been more frustrated. Although you could argue that playing up that frustration would kind of be going over the same beats that they do later on.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to go to the same degree as like what happened with Nakamura, but at least, you know, have Asuka look disappointed that she's lost. Like, there's a middle ground between those two.
Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely.
On the subject of disappointed, we can move on to the next match.
Yeah, literally anyone could have won this match other than Jinder Mahal, which is Jinder Mahal versus Randy Orton versus Bobby Roode versus Rusev. And yeah, it was a face four-way for the US Championship, and Jinder Mahal is a champion again.
Well, was.
Yeah.
You know what? I would have been so happy had Bobby Roode won this, because I honestly think he's not being used at all well at the moment. I mean, I still can't get over the fact he's a face and has that bloody entrance music.
Yeah, it's like he's the perfect package as a heel and yet is inexplicably a face.
Yeah, and obviously Rusev winning would have been amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Rusev winning would have just been too well received. So they obviously can't have Rusev win because Rusev's popular and entertaining on his own.
It's interesting because I had, like, when I was sort of looking through the card, I was thinking, usually at WrestleMania, they'll do like two or three matches where the result is very obviously just sort of like to appease the internet crowd and keep them happy. And out of all of them, I thought this was one of those matches where, like, I know it's a title match, but ultimately the winner is quite inconsequential. And it'd be a really nice way to keep the crowd engaged, to give Rusev that win. Kind of like they did with Zack Ryder winning the IC title.
the controversial one. I'm interested to see what you two think about Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey versus Triple H and Stephanie McMahon, because I really enjoyed this match.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I thought we were going to get some negativity.
No, I mean, there's certainly stuff I could be negative about, like with specifics within the match. But overall, I thought it was arguably the best match on the whole show.
Yeah, I would also be inclined to kind of go that way. It was. It was just a lot of fun, and
yes.
Triple H selling Rousey's punches was amazing. Triple H sold Rousey's offense better than Stephanie did, which like is some crazy WWE logic that Stephanie is the best. Then it's Ronda Rousey, then it's Triple H, and then somewhere down at the bottom there's Kurt Angle, Olympian.
Yeah.
But,
like,
yeah,
it was baffling the amount that they had, like, nepotistic businesswoman Stephanie McMahon successfully block trained MMA fighter Ronda Rousey's submission holds. That it stretched credibility a little bit. But that is ultimately, with the way the whole match played out, I think that's nitpicking.
Yeah, I thought this was a really good... This was sports entertainment, as horrible as that phrase is, at its very best, I thought.
Yeah, it had the vibe of, like, Vince versus Shane at WrestleMania 17.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It was non-performers in the ring putting on the best performance they could and telling a fairly decent story along with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. I thought we were going to get a bit of... I hate this shit. But no, best Triple H match at WrestleMania ever. okay, I can't even remember this match happening. The Bludgeon Brothers versus the Usos versus the New Day, with the Bludgeon Brothers coming out on top.
Yeah, in the death spot, basically.
Yeah.
So had the show been... just, what, five matches? And it was the IC US Women's, and then Kurt Angle and Ronda. That could have been a fine pay-per-view on its own. Like, that felt really well put together as, like, this is the first segment, and this is the first main event. Then these lads came out, and it was just weird. And nothing really worked. It was all over too quickly, and nothing really seemed to gel together.
Yeah. No, the crowd didn't care. They didn't have enough time. Like, they had fewer minutes in the match than participants.
Really?
Yeah, it went under 6 minutes.
Oh,
it was a triple
God.
Threat tag match. It just... they rushed through the spots. Bludgeon Brothers basically dominated from the start. And... yeah, it's a shame that, like, while it's great for the Usos to finally get a spot on the main card at WrestleMania, it's a shame that it was in such, like, summary fashion.
Yeah, I could have happily watched the build-up to this match again, so have 10 minutes of Usos versus New Day, and let them do their... because they've got great in-ring chemistry and all that, and then let's get the Bludgeon Brothers over... by bringing them out and having them kill everyone. And the time you'd have saved on Rowan and Harper walking to the ring really slowly for their entrance, you could have added in a few more spots for a well-worked tag match and then have them do the run-in. And everyone's still in the same position. The Bludgeon Brothers could win it on SmackDown the night after. And... they're elevated because they look good against these two teams that have dominated the SmackDown tag division for so long. A strange match that wherever it went was going to be weird.
Yeah, like they kind of didn't have a chance with just the placement on the card, the amount of time that they were allotted, which I get why they were allotted so little time. Like, it's a ridiculously long show.
A waste of talent, of all of whom can deliver a lot better, and I'm sure will deliver better.
Yep.
Oh yeah, Luke Harper's got so much to give, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah, we both love Luke Harper.
Yeah. Do you love Luke Harper, Jack?
I'm a fan of Harper, yes. Yeah.
Do you love him?
Do I love him? Maybe I don't love him, but I don't think... it was around this time last year, or just before WrestleMania last year, we were talking about him getting in there with Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt and changing the match, changing their championship match, which was awful, into a triple threat, which could have been good.
How much better would both the Orton Wyatt stuff and Luke Harper's prospects have been if they'd done that?
Yeah, and they absolutely should have. And now the weird, weird segment. Cena's comes out again, and there's no one, and he's saying to The Undertaker, he's calling him out. The lights go out, and it's Elias.
Yes.
I thought this was great. I think Elias, since moving up to the main roster, has his gimmick works so much better on the main roster than it ever did in NXT.
Yep.
And I thought he got basically jobbed out in 30 seconds, but it wasn't a proper match. He just beat him up. But great, great, great for Elias to be in that spot with Cena.
Yep.
And then, obviously, The Undertaker made his appearance, which we all knew he was going to do. And then he just battered Cena. Which was, again, it was weird.
Yeah, it was very, very weird. But I must confess that I absolutely loved it. I thought it was perfect. Because after last year especially, but also the few years beforehand, I had no interest in seeing a long Undertaker match.
Yeah, I'd agree there. He looked a lot better in those 3 minutes than he did in 25 minutes against Reigns.
Yeah. It's like it was the first time since maybe since he had the rematch at SummerSlam against Brock Lesnar that he hasn't looked like a tired old man.
Yeah, absolutely. Like
with the exception of the big boot spot where he missed Cena by about 5 foot and Cena still sold it.
Yeah, that was painful.
But yeah, otherwise I thought this worked perfectly for The Undertaker. It's set up I liked the story they're effectively telling with Cena running his mouth and just not turning heel as such, but the longer it went on with no sign of The Undertaker, the more convinced Cena was that The Undertaker wasn't going to show up. And so when The Undertaker does show up, he's just completely taken aback and caught off guard and destroyed. I thought that worked pretty well.
Yeah, I thought it's probably the best use of The Undertaker on the card, and also probably the best use of Cena on the card. Elias got a bit of a rub from it.
Cena loses nothing from it, essentially.
Yeah. Cena doesn't get harmed that much. He's still the number one superstar. It brought his character down a little bit, but in a way that his character needed to be.
Yes.
It was weird, but kind of good.
Yeah, I would have liked them to have highlighted that a bit more. In fact, perhaps have Cena go on the mic the next night and say something like, I did take it for granted,
See, I think that my fan theory is that they will do that, but they are going to push to have a rematch next year at WrestleMania.
Okay.
Where it will be longer and that will be Undertaker's last match.
Okay.
But who knows? I mean, I thought multiple matches were going to have been Undertaker's last match.
Yeah, so many of them could have been his last match, and he still manages to keep going. But like we said about Triple H earlier, best Undertaker's looked at WrestleMania for years. And then there was the big one, Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. This was a crazy match.
Yeah, I actually missed a reasonable amount of this. I had to sort of pop away from the TV for a bit. But basically, from my understanding, what I missed was Shane McMahon single-handedly beating up Owens and Zayn.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you've got to have your McMahons are the top of everything. Then it's previous superstars, celebrities, current superstars.
Yeah,
Shane McMahon is still booked like the most... Since coming back, Shane McMahon has been possibly the top superstar.
That's a problem.
He's gone toe-to-toe with The Undertaker and AJ Styles and several times up against Kevin Owens now. It's crazy how over or how strongly booked Shane McMahon has been in the past 3 years and or two years. The maddest thing as well is that it's been 2 years since he came back.
Yeah.
Like, where, not that, you know, oh God, I'm so old, but where does that time go?
Yeah, 2 years, seriously.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because we were talking about it on the very early K-Words, that we can't believe Shane McMahon came back, and we've been doing this for two-ish years now with 18 episodes to show for it.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
Yeah, I enjoyed seeing Daniel Bryan back in the ring. He was very good.
Yeah, it was another one of those matches where it felt like they made it a certain length of time because they felt like they had to. Ultimately, it was a vessel to be a feel-good moment for Daniel Bryan, which I can appreciate.
Would you not have preferred a Daniel Bryan heel turn with Shane McMahon, with them all three of them kicking the shit out of Shane McMahon?
Yes and no. Like, I don't want to have them try and make me boo Daniel Bryan anytime soon.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see them. I wouldn't have minded that attempted heel turn, but I think all that would really have done was raise the entertainment value out of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and got them over in that kind of... They're not... None of those who are going to get properly booed.
Mm.
But they could still do villainous things and get cheered, and I think that would have been an interesting angle. And it would have kind of flipped SmackDown on its head. But also, I completely understand this feud between the four of them has more than likely run its course by now. So yeah. Let's get them split up and do something new and interesting.
Yeah, because I mean, the feud started before SummerSlam last year.
Mm.
All right, Nia Jax defeated Alexa Bliss for the Raw Women's Championship. Decent match. Again, in a bit of a dead spot on the card?
Yeah, like, given what the match ultimately ended up being, I think it could easily have been under 5 minutes and still accomplished exactly the same thing. Like, they had Nia beat the tar out of Mickie James before the start of the match, then, like, to establish Alexa Bliss has no backup, she's got to fend for herself against this vengeful, incredibly strong opponent that she's not ready to deal with, and then they had Bliss still be on top for a while, and then Nia wins in over 10 minutes, and it's like Bliss wouldn't really have lost anything from just losing that quicker, and would have, you know, made the feel good moment. For me, it would have made it feel more good, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think they probably could have given this 5 minutes rather than 10, but then at the same time, when they're making such a big thing out of the women's evolution and the women's evolution and we're taking women's matches seriously, I don't think we can really complain that a women's match went for 10 minutes when it should have gone for 5.
Yeah, like, I'd rather they make the women's matches too long rather than too short, certainly. But I just feel like this is one of those cases where it being short would actually have helped it rather than hurt it.
Yeah.
Like, as long as it didn't go shorter than like Undertaker versus Cena, then that would have been fine.
AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura. This one, I couldn't believe. I thought Shinsuke Nakamura was nailed on to win this match, and he didn't.
Yeah, that was weird.
Styles retained.
I called Styles winning. I didn't call the heel turn, and I'm really glad that I didn't, because it was a pleasant surprise, because I thought that was the perfect way to advance Shinsuke without taking the title off AJ, which I didn't think they wanted to do.
Yeah, I think if they were planning on taking AJ over to Raw, they could have done that. Mm. But if AJ was staying on SmackDown, maybe him keeping the title and Shinsuke turning heel was the right way to go. And I think heel Shinsuke is going to be very interesting. I already love his new heel theme with the Japanese rapping over it.
Oh, so it's great, isn't it?
That sounds amazing. Like, I didn't think they could go to the next level with that already excellent theme. and they just have, and I was like, I wonder how long they've kind of had this in the back of their mind that that is where they were going to go with Shinsuke, and it's brilliant. I think they've got the chance to make Nakamura the main eventer he always should have been.
Yeah, like, he's much more interesting to me as, like, vicious, evil heel Nakamura than he would have been as face champion Nakamura.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah, like, thumbs up completely for the booking of this match. I will say on the match itself, it might be my vote for most disappointing match of the weekend in terms of what I thought it could be versus what it was.
They gave it a lot of hype, didn't they? And it wasn't as good as the Wrestle Kingdom one.
Was also like the second longest match on this entire card, and it didn't keep my attention the way I wanted it to. And that might well be my fault, because obviously by this point it was like, what, 4 in the morning or whatever, UK time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was lunchtime for me when I was watching it.
Yeah, I mean, I was really expecting this one to, like, knock it out the park, and I was feeling a little bit underwhelmed by it, I guess.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't a bad match or anything. It should have been match of the night, and I haven't heard anyone propose it as being in that spot.
No. And I think I think part of that was just how damn entertaining the mixed tag from earlier in the night was. If that match had bombed, I think these guys would probably be a bit more in contention. But, yeah, definitely a slightly disappointing, but not wanting to take away from two phenomenal performers. But they could have done better.
Yeah, their standards are higher than this, basically.
And then another weird match. It was The Bar, Cesaro and Sheamus versus Braun Strowman and someone from the crowd who turned out to be like an 8-year-old boy.
Yes, Nicholas.
Yeah, and Cesaro and Sheamus came out on like a Mardi Gras float.
Yeah.
Which was weird. They're supposed to be like these big badass heels.
Yeah. And they turned up for a party and then the face Braun Strowman ruined the Mardi Gras float and scared off the people that had been on the float, which was an unusual decision.
It was all strange. I just wondered, like, did they have the Mardi Gras float for like the New Day entrance or something? And then they forgot to use it, so they're like, "Oh, we'll set Cesaro and Sheamus can do that."
Can't have Brock come out on it. We can't have
Roman.
Yeah, it's like, what? Like, should they have actually used the Mardi Gras float to come out during Cena ranting at The Undertaker for not coming out? That could have been funny. But, yeah, they were just not the right team to have a comedy entrance.
No.
But what did we think of Nicholas? I loved it. I thought, again, this is not... It wasn't wrestling, but it was wrestling. I thought it was very sports entertainment, feel good. This is a bit of fun.
Yeah, it was very, very sweet. And I was a little bit worried about the kid, I guess, but apparently the referee was his father.
Yeah.
So that hopefully, because I was thinking, my God, that could be incredibly traumatic just being up there like.
And Cesaro 100% wanted to kill him, which I thought was excellent. Like, he looked at Nicholas the same way he looks at beach balls. and as for whether it undermines Cesaro and Sheamus, I think it's been well established that Braun Strowman, it takes multiple men to beat him.
Yeah.
And like, I don't think it does them any damage not being able to finish him off.
It does damage in the sense of, like, I wouldn't buy either of them in a one-on-one match with Braun Strowman anytime soon. But ultimately, who cares? Like,
because that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, like, it's, you know, we'd like Cesaro and to a lesser extent Sheamus to be higher up the card than they are often positioned to be. But they're fine where they are. They get good matches regularly, which is kind of all we want at the end of the day.
Yep.
And yeah, Braun Strowman is like this you know, that meme-like anomaly where he can do anything to anyone and it doesn't really hurt the person he's doing it to because it's Braun Strowman.
Yeah, and he's just incredibly entertaining and fun. And I really think with this Nicholas business, it gets him over with kids in a way that they've not really managed to do with, say, Roman Reigns or anyone since Cena.
Yeah, Strowman is still the scary monster, but now he's the scary monster that could also be like your cool uncle or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and oh, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the way they go with Braun, that he's still this monster ass kicker, but all of a sudden he's done a fuckload of make-a-wish visits and that kind of thing.
Yeah, he's like the monster with a heart of gold, isn't he? I mean, we saw that with his pairing up with Alexa Bliss.
Yeah. It's amazing how, like, we were talking about this earlier today, but how we...
I completely wrote him off when he was in the Wyatt family.
Yeah, like,
I was bored to death of him, and I disliked him quite strongly.
Yeah, I mean, we routinely on this podcast, when we started, were calling him, like, bland strongman.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And now it's like, yeah, he's one of the top people to watch on the card. Like, he's obviously not, like, one of the top wrestlers on the card, but he's one of the top entertainers, if we're going to, you know, use the sports entertainment vernacular. He is one of the top superstars.
Happy to be wrong there. I mean, it's great.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm never going to complain about someone outperforming what we expect of them.
That's it.
And, yeah, it's amazing how he has this aura of badass menace, and that doesn't go away no matter what he does. Like, you know, he pairs with Alexa Bliss and sort of has this weird romance thing going on. It's like, no, it's still Braun Strowman. He's still awesome. We've got this weird segment where he comes out with a double bass to play in front of Elias and is in this comedy segment. And it's like, no, he's still this ass-kicking monster. Oh, okay. He's going to come out dressed as a professor and call himself Brains Strowman.
Yeah, like, they seem to be able to do anything with him. And it's both entertaining and doesn't damage his character.
Yeah, he can do no wrong right now, which is great. And, like, I saw people, like, disparaging the Nicholas thing, being, oh, that's stupid, why would he pick Nicholas? And it's like, the entire build for this match was Strowman repeatedly saying he didn't need a partner. Yes. Like, over and over again, that was what he was saying. Like, and he was saying, you know, I will choose, you know, my twin brain Strowman and stuff like that, because he didn't want to actually have another wrestler. So him making the point of I can win this with a child felt completely correct and natural to me.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think of somebody else that had that kind of ability to do anything and yet still be considered a threat, and the only person that sprung to mind at the moment is Kurt Angle.
I was thinking Mick Foley, Mankind.
Okay, Mick
could always do the comedy stuff with Mr. Socko and all that, but still be a threat and considered in the ring. And just Mick Foley put quite a lot of people over, but because of his amazing performances at Hell in a Cell and all that, or was always a legitimate tough guy.
Mm.
I was thinking probably Kurt Angle and Mick Foley are the guys that they could do goofy things with and he would still be a legitimate threat.
For me, the one, like, this is possibly hyperbole just because of how important the person I'm comparing him to is, but he has the vibe he reminds me of most is like Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, wow.
Obviously, you know, he's not a ridiculously huge person that's going to create another wrestling boom or anything. But just in terms of, like, he's every single time you tune in because you want to see what's Strowman going to do this week. And
that's a good point.
Austin had that same vibe, like, how's he going to antagonize Vince McMahon this week? Except this time it's just, what weird, weird act of carnage and destruction is Braun Strowman going to enact?
So things like filling Vince McMahon's car with cement or spraying people with beer, that kind of stuff.
Cement, I think it's pronounced.
Cement?
Austin is filling McMahon's car with cement.
And, yeah, that's quite high praise that we're comparing him there to Mick Foley, Stone Cold and Kurt Angle. That's there's some major, major names, like industry-defining names. And if they play their cards right with Braun, is he going to be that same level? Who knows?
And again, not to harp on it, but when we first started this podcast, the person we were comparing him to was the great Khali. So it's amazing how much our estimation of him has gone up.
Yeah, and what a turnaround you can have.
Yeah, like, and also one last thing on this match. I think we need to congratulate Nicholas for succeeding Rene Dupre as the youngest ever title holder in WWE.
Yeah. Well, on to the bad one. The singles match for the WWE Universal Championship, the main event of the main event of main events, WrestleMania 34, was Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns. This match went on forever.
Yep.
And lost the crowd completely. Both
yep.
competitors in it were seemingly irreparably damaged by being part of this match.
And yeah, it was just appalling, really, wasn't it?
It was bad. Brock Lesnar has been phoning it in now for so long and still getting a reaction from the crowd. And this really felt like the turning point where people went, nah, fuck Brock Lesnar and fuck Roman Reigns and fuck this match.
Yeah. I mean, when it's the main event of your biggest show of the year and it's getting a this is awful chant.
Yeah.
It's not a good sign.
No. And I actually think it was a real letdown on the rest of the show, because while there were weird bits about the rest of the show, generally, it was all entertaining in one way or another.
Yep.
And then there was this, and it just put a real, real sour note on this WrestleMania, which had it gone slight, had this match been shorter or just a different match, it could probably have been regarded up there as one of the best modern WrestleManias.
Yeah, no, I completely and utterly agree. And maybe this is too soon to say, given what potential storylines they might go into in the future, which I might sort of talk about when we're discussing the Greatest Royal Rumble rematch. But it felt like it seriously damaged Roman Reigns, like in terms of the entire story for literally like 3 or 4 years now has been about building him up to conquering Brock Lesnar for the title. And then he finally gets his shot. No outside interference, no dodgy goings on whatsoever. Just straight up one-on-one shot, and he loses, and it doesn't look close.
Yeah.
And they try to tell the story of him, oh, you know, he's kicking out of the F5 over and over again. It's like, yeah, but he's still getting hit with the F5 over and over again.
Yeah.
And he just looks like a second-class superstar next to Lesnar in that match.
Yeah.
It's absolutely baffling to me.
It's very strange. It's beginning to get to the point where you're thinking, is Brock Lesnar like? Are we going to look back at this and call this the Lesnar era in the same way that we the first six or first nine WrestleManias were ultimately dominated by Hulk Hogan, and that was fine to begin with. And then it gets to WrestleMania 9, and this is Brock Lesnar's WrestleMania 9 moment, where he actually, the crowd turns on him, and he's damaged as a product because of how strongly he's been booked against the guy they've been building up to beat. Like, is Brock Lesnar backstage politicking to be the top guy? Does he care that much? Or, like, if it was set up for him to lose this match, and it has been since at least this time last year, why did he win it?
Yeah, like, and I mean, the rumour is that he was angry backstage at the fact that they put him in a position to be in a match that had that kind of negative reaction.
But why? That's as much on him as it is on Roman. When you have two ill-defined characters as we don't know who we're going to cheer. We don't know who we're going to cheer for here, the incredibly overexposed guy or the incredibly overexposed guy. It's why did no one see this coming? Why did Paul Heyman, the genius booker and possibly best ever wrestling writer, not see this coming?
I don't know.
It's mystifying how they didn't understand. They didn't anticipate that that match could go down badly.
Yeah, especially because, like, throughout the build up, the storyline they'd been telling wasn't about Roman Reigns putting over why he's the guy to beat Lesnar. Or, you know, they weren't building the story, really. Like, they addressed it a few times, but the main crux of the story they were telling wasn't Reigns had his shot 3 years ago, Lesnar was kicking his ass, but he was finally getting back into it when the moment, you know, the rug was pulled from underneath him. Now that's not going to be an issue this time, and he's here to, you know, show that he is good enough to win. The storyline they were telling was Brock Lesnar's a part-timer. You shouldn't want him as his as this company's champion. And they didn't do anything to try to encourage the fans to get behind Roman. They just seemed to hope that if the fans disliked Lesnar more, that they'd cheer Roman by proxy, rather than rather than guessing that they might do a similar thing to what they did, you know, as long ago as two WrestleManias ago when he faced Triple H and the crowd just shat over it.
Yeah. Do you think that if you switch this match with Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey versus Triple H and Stephanie, I think this match is then received better, and the all-round entertainment factor of that mixed tag match will probably send people home happy.
Yeah, like, there's so many things we can say about this match that was bad, but certainly the fact that it was such an underwhelming finish for a pay-per-view that had lasted for approximately 700 years.
Yeah.
You're completely right that they set it up so that the only acceptable result from like a satisfying narrative standpoint was Reigns winning, even if it's not what the live crowd actually wanted. And then they managed to do something that the live crowd still didn't want.
Yes.
That just made no sense in terms of the overall story they were telling. And at the time, Kev and I were like, oh, well, that's just a terrible decision. And then the next night, they announced that there's going to be the rematch at the Greatest Royal Rumble. Then we were like, oh, okay, it's just an incredibly cynical decision to get, you know, to move the coronation to a country where Reigns will be cheered. And, I mean, we can chat about how that one turned out a little bit. But, yeah, it just was an absolutely mind-bogglingly weird decision to me. Like, there was no better moment for them to conclude that storyline than in the main event of the biggest show of the year.
Yeah.
And they decided not to.
We'd all kind of resigned ourselves to it. We're just like, okay, let's just get this over with and move on to something else.
We're not going to enjoy this, but we, you know, we've made our peace with it. We're at the, you know, the grief stage, you know, acceptance stage of grief with this whole thing.
And we're ready for Reigns versus Joe as soon as they come back out. And that's fine going into next year. Lesnar's off. That's fine. And then it's not like, no, Lesnar's sticking around. Reigns is sticking around. Reigns isn't the champion. And now, are we going to have to do this again next year?
Yeah, it's like, what was the point of any of that, ultimately? And it was like a worst of, as well, as a match, in terms of, like, it had the, like, albeit incorrect, inevitability of a Roman victory that immediately made the crowd stop liking it. They took away Lesnar's aura of being this badass by just having him, you know, repeatedly hit his finisher over and over again and it not work. They were doing the thing that I really don't understand why they'd want to do, of keeping count of the two moves they're doing. Of like, Lesnar has hit this many Germans and this many F5s. Meanwhile, Roman has hit this many Superman punches and this many spears. And it's just like, it makes it look like they're Pokemon that don't have any more moves.
Yeah, it wasn't like the over reliance on finishers and kicking out of finishers made it dull. Like, if you look at a very similar match where there were a lot of finisher kickouts, you look at Cena and Styles back at Royal Rumble or SummerSlam, particularly that SummerSlam match, kicking out with those finishers then were exciting, but Cena and Styles have a much wider moveset than those two lads.
Yes.
And they can pull together a match with these like varied movesets, which then you build up to your finishers, which is why it's exciting when they kick out of them. When you've only got two or three moves that you're doing over and over again, it's not exciting to see, oh, he's kicked out of it once, he can kick out of it again. And it devalues the spear, it devalues the German suplex, it actually devalues people who've used those moves before, it devalues Edge's offense, it devalues Kurt Angle's offense, because those moves that were so over when those performers did them, that those moves are so overexposed at this point, you can see that it's having no effect on them whatsoever.
Yeah, and then as the cherry on top of the worst of elements of the match, we got Lesnar busting open Reigns.
Absolutely terrible.
Which, yeah, I can't believe they did that again after it was received so poorly when they did it with Orton.
Yeah, it didn't get any heat on Lesnar. It made people feel a bit sorry for Orton, but not in a way that got him more over as a performer. And yeah, Reigns got beaten up and bled, and that was it.
And also, Reigns bled so much that I legitimately thought it was fake. So I was like, you can't get that much blood from just doing that. It must be fake. And so it didn't even enhance the drama of the match for me.
Yeah, like, I mean, I have issues with blood. And I was sort of going, oh, like looking away, wasn't I?
Yeah.
And you went, don't worry, it's fake. And I was like, it was still obviously setting me off, regardless of whether it's fake or not, it wouldn't matter. But you told me at the time it was fake, but watching it back, it's, you see we bust open, don't you? You actually see it happen, and it's like, oh God.
Which, yeah, like, just everything about the match was bad in terms of the booking, in terms of the structure of the match, in terms of specific things they did in the match. I think it's a real shame that they took what, as you were saying, had been a perfectly good WrestleMania up to that point, and then ended it like that.
Yeah, it's shocking. And then just such a disappointment after what had been a good show. Yeah. And it goes to show that they can do these good shows, they can make these super long WrestleManias work, but no one's remembering that. Everyone's just remembering, God, that match was bad.
One last thing on WrestleMania, especially with regards to it being super long. I don't know if you know this, Jack, so if you don't, feel free to guess. How long on this, what was, including the pre-show, a seven-hour show, how much of that time do you think was matches from bell to bell?
All right. So I am cheating slightly because I've got, because we're a very professional podcast, I've got Wikipedia open in front of me. So I can see that there are a couple of matches that went, the longest matches went about 20 minutes and the shortest went 2 to 5.
Yeah, although of course there were 14 matches.
Yeah, so I'm going to say it was maybe 30% ring. 30% bell to bell, and the rest was entrances and promos and nothing.
That's not a bad guess. It was certainly under 3 hours of the 7 hour show was wrestling, which, like, obviously I get it's the biggest show of the year. They need bombast. They need to present it as this big spectacle.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had stuff like the Elias segment in there that obviously wasn't wrestling, but still contributed towards. You know, you can almost add that onto the match time of the Undertaker Cena match.
Yeah.
It still seems like the easiest way to improve the show by far would be to, you know, maybe make the entrances, like, even if just make the entrance ramp shorter.
Make the entrance ramp shorter. Make the entrances shorter. Don't only run the promo for the match before the match itself. So you're not burnt out on the promo before you even get to the match. Like, you shouldn't be feeling exhausted about seeing the same interview with Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey, or Triple H saying, "Kurt Angle's an idiot." Like, I'm sure, like, I not my favourite line from WrestleMania, but I heard it like 6 or 7 times during the course of WrestleMania, and I just was like, I'm burnt out on this now. The effect that those promo packages would have had just before each match would have been so much more effective than playing them constantly all the way through. If you think of, like, the, to hold it up, because we always have to talk about WrestleMania 17, but that Limp Bizkit My Way package with Stone Cold and The Rock, had they put that on in between every match or whatever on the rest of the card, I'd have been done with that promo package by the end of it and bored for the match.
Yep.
Whereas, because of where it lands, and you're like, okay, here it is, it's the man, it's the match that both man has to win and neither man can afford to lose, boom, here's the promo package, I'm excited, I'm interesting. And yeah, there's just way, way too much fluff in WrestleMania.
Yeah, like, over 4 hours of the entire show, comfortably over 4 hours, was non-wrestling. You could easily cut an hour off that and lose nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Hall of Fame. They've already done a dedicated Hall of Fame show on the Friday night. Do they need to take 20 minutes of could-be wrestling time to do it at WrestleMania as well? Like, is the Hall of Fame devalued in any way by them not getting to come out and wave?
Yeah. I mean, I think the answer to all this is that content is king. In the network model, for them, they'd rather produce more content than better content. And so for them, a 7-hour-long show with under 3 hours of wrestling is better than a 6-hour-long show with under 3 hours of wrestling, because it's an extra hour to sell as content on the network.
Yeah.
And, you know, sucks to be you, people in the live audience.
But it's content on the network that people fast-forward through. They literally tag network pay-per-views from bell ring to finish. So they know that people aren't interested in the guff. So why fill it with guff? It makes very little sense.
Do you think it's because... Oh, no, it doesn't even make sense. So it's just like people in the States perhaps treating it like an event, so you can't really fast forward through it if you're there with, like, you know, in a pub watching it kind of thing. But that's not really their target audience anymore, is it?
But you don't... Okay, I get that they want to make it the Super Bowl, but the Super Bowl has $1 million ads that people have spent their entire, like, 2 years getting ready to make that ad. There's no Super Bowl ads at WrestleMania. It's not an institution in the same way. And it just doesn't, like... It doesn't make sense for it to be 7 hours if it could be 5 hours.
Yeah.
And for the extra 2 hours of the... for the extra 2 hours to fill of network time, everyone who owns the network knows how to fast-forward through the stuff they don't want to watch. So it doesn't matter that it might be filling 7 hours' time. People are only watching it for the 3 hours of wrestling. Hi there, Mate here. You've just finished listening to the first half of a fairly epic recording session. So we decided we're going to split this into 2 episodes. So you've just finished listening to episode 18 of The K-Word, our WrestleMania 34 review. Come back later on this week and we'll have some great chat about the Superstar Shake-Up and the Greatest Royal Rumble. We'll see you soon.